The Citizens' March Against Crime was the largest and most diverse demonstration of community solidarity in New Orleans history. Every neighborhood, every race, every age, every class streamed out of their homes, schools, and businesses to join a 5,000-strong march to City Hall. For almost any other parade in New Orleans, even funerals, the procession of marchers and dancers would be accompanied by a loud brass band. The March Against Crime, however, was notably subdued, reflecting the solemn occasion which brought citizens together. In signs held high and in speeches filled with emotion, New Orleans citizens screamed a collective cry of anguish. The events which precipitated the march were the murders of two beloved members of the community, Denaryl Shavers and Helen Hill. Shavers was a drummer for the Hot 8 Brass Band, and a music teacher who started a marching band curriculum at Rob Wayne High School. Helen Hill was an independent filmmaker whose generosity and playful spirit fastened friendships with whomever she met. Her husband, Dr. Paul Galiunas, served low-income patients and played in a band called the Troublemakers. Although citizens expressed their exasperation with the lack of meaningful initiatives to deal with a rising crime problem, their anguish also reflected the culmination of a year and a half of suffering under a void of leadership at all levels of government. After salvaging their possessions, after gutting their homes, after fighting their insurance companies, after attending an endless schedule of planning meetings, and after enduring the snail's pace of road home assistance to rebuild their homes, many just clinging to the lives they once had before the levee breaks during Hurricane Katrina destroyed the city. Mayor Ray Nagin and Police Superintendent Warren Riley attempted to calm the tempest by holding press conferences to announce new crime-fighting initiatives, but citizen anger couldn't be suppressed. At the rally, Nagin and Riley were forced to sit silently as speaker after speaker demanded change. One speaker even told the mayor and police chief that this was the citizens' turn at a press conference. District Attorney Eddie Jordan did not attend the rally. Cassandra Burroughs conducted the interviews for this story, which begins with an audio clip from a collage radio show featuring Helen Hill talking about her grandfather, Pop, then talking at a forum in South Carolina about restoring films ruined by floodwater.
And he used to make Coke and milk for me. That was good. And he used to buy that peanut butter that has the jelly already in it. It started with a G. Goober. I don't know. Oh. He used to make sandwiches out of that. But he used to have the kind that was peanut butter and banana stuff. It was like Goober, but it was
baby food.
But that was good when I was little. And he used to have this clock from the Black Forest. Isn't that in Germany? Yeah, a cuckoo clock. Yeah, yeah, from the Black Forest. That's where they get them, right? And it goes cuckoo. The little bird comes out. And then sometimes the little dancers come out. And they go dee, 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 dee. And the music goes. This little music box starts. And the dancers go around and they go around. And they spin around and they rotate around. I think he used to have chickens. He used to grow peanuts. He used to have flying squirrels. He took them, he found them, and they used to fly into his pocket because he put peanuts in his pocket. And they used to fly and get them out of his pocket and then fly away. No, really. He used to put peanuts in his pocket and they fly to him. You know, flying squirrels, they glide. And they used to take out the peanuts from his pocket and eat them. But he always had lots of fun bringing us up because he had all these toys and he could play with them with us. Like this little bear that would go, it would go across the string, up on the ceiling. His little bear, and it was on a bicycle, and it'd go across the string, way across the room. Then he was always doing those planes and making kites and we used to always watch Captain Kangaroo and all the good shows.
Helen Hill is a native of Columbia, South Carolina,
and a temporarily displaced person because of Hurricane Katrina, and she's a filmmaker and a home movie maker and a celluloid lover and artist. She's brought us a little sampling. We seem to have a water theme going, so Helen Hill, please.
Hello. So I'm here as an independent filmmaker who's recently had to figure out a DIY, a do-it-yourself style of film restoration. I grew up here, but we were living in New Orleans because I loved New Orleans, and we have a baby son and a pet pig, so we figured we should go ahead and be safe and evacuate from New Orleans. So we evacuated, and then a month later, I was finally able to return to the house. And I'd spent a month thinking that everything was lost because we knew that Mid-City had flooded. So I was just glad to go and be able to salvage maybe 10% of our belongings and to figure out what to do with everything. It was a strange place, the house, because the floodwaters were just filthy and strange, and clothes looked like they were tie-dyed. And then I had this book animation studies, this library, and it was so bloated and swollen that I had to throw away all the books, but I got them all out, and there were four little frogs behind them on the bookshelf, alive, that had come in with the water and were only able to escape when I got the books out, and they were fine. So it was a strange place. But there I was. And also Bill Morrison, he's showing his latest next, but I had a VHS. I wasn't too worried about my VHS animation and films. But there was his VHS copy of Decasia, and I was throwing away all the VHSs thinking, oh, these are replaceable and they're filthy. And his was just filthy, just coated with mold and dirt, just in the water, just awful, gross. But my husband, Paul, he insisted that I save it for Bill Morrison as a souvenir, so I was able to give it to him here. I had these films, and I thought, what to do, what do I do with these films? And if you read a little bit of research on the internet, it says within 48 hours, get them to a lab, you know, as quick as you can, send them to a lab. I actually did send them to a small lab in Virginia, and they were rejected. They were sent back to me with a note. I'd sent the Super 8 reels, which were the hardest hit, and they were sent back with a note that said, "We're sorry, Helen, your films are beyond restoration." And so I figured at that point I just had to do it myself, or I figured I'd give it a go. And I got in touch with Larry Urbanski, and he sent me Film Rewinds and Film Renew, the chemical. So I set it up in my basement, and I've just been cleaning the films by hand. I've just given them an initial cleaning, and you're going to see 4 minutes of it here. I've just given them initial cleaning. I can go back and clean more stuff off, but you're going to see 4 minutes of this, and it's all actually, I do animation, but I shoot I still use Super 8 for home movies, and so it's actually all home movies that were shot within the last 5 years, but have aged prematurely with the floodwaters, and they've been optically printed up to 16 millimeter, so you're seeing the blow up, and this is just a sampling. The first few seconds is actually just the mold. When I unroll the films, about a quarter to a third of the film is unrecognizable. I can't tell at first what film it is even, because there's just this mold, which is nice. It is pretty to see. So you'll see a few seconds of that, and then just excerpts of home movies. So a few of them are slowed down. A few of them aren't. It's, plus X, tri X, Kodachrome, Ektachrome, Super 8. Movies. My son, the baby, he was only 10 months old when the hurricane came, so whenever you see a baby, the film is definitely less than, the film is very new. But luckily I'm an experimental filmmaker, so I can use these images in future films. And it's thank you for letting me come and talk. Thank you, Dan Strebel, and it's amazing, it's really serendipitous that I should be in Columbia, and here's the Orphans Film Symposium, because there's Russ at Color Lab, Kara Von Malson, Bill Brand, they've all given me these experts on, and with Larry Urbanski, I've been able to figure out a method that works, even for an independent filmmaker with not much money to do it with. So that's been really lucky, so thank you.
What's your name, and why are you here today?
My name's Kyle Bravo, and I'm here to stand up against the problem with crime in our city and to let the elected officials of New Orleans know that I've lost faith in them.
And did you used to have faith and now you don't?
Well, it was pretty hard to have faith since Katrina. Maybe I had a shred of it left still, but after losing Helen, I basically have zero faith. Maybe negative faith now. No faith.
And she was a friend of yours?
Yeah. She was kind of a peripheral friend of mine and more of like a friend of a friend, but from just the little interactions that I did have with her, I just totally came away with knowing her as this amazing, like totally loving and caring and giving person. Both her and Paul were just like these lights shining in the city, and it's just really tragic that this happened to them of all people.
Do you have any specific suggestions or ideas that City Hall maybe could take away from this march and use to help stop the problem?
I guess that what I feel needs to be done is possibly even out of bigger than just what City Hall can do, because I feel like it's the things that City Hall is trying to do are basically put Band-Aids on the problems, and that the problems have causes that are deeper than can be solved by putting more police on the streets or what have you. And it really has to do with creating a social structure or a society or community or whatever where people look out for each other and take care of each other. So I don't know. Can City Hall do that? Probably not. They should all go away and let us learn to just take care of each other.
My name is Chaz Leary, and I'm here to help show solidarity that we need to do something about this crime in the city.
What neighborhood do you live in?
Bywater.
What messages do you want to bring to City Hall today, specifically in regards to crime?
We want really concrete answers to all the questions. The little talk they had yesterday about the checkpoints and all that stuff, that didn't really do anything, as far as I was concerned. We really want to know exactly what kind of plans do they have to make the city safer and get the criminals off the streets and keep them off the streets.
So where do you feel like some of the root of the problem is in the city?
The root of the problem is like, you know, poor education, not really good jobs for people, fueled by the hopelessness, you know, that people have, and with drugs involved in that, you know, like hardcore drugs involved with that. It's a bad mix. You know, have people undereducated or uneducated, not have really many possibilities for a decent job and stuff, it's going to bring bear resentment. And now it seems like lately, since Katrina, there's been a lot more stuff involving weapons, you know, and robberies and things along, the muggings along those lines.
Do you have any sense of where this influx of weapons has come from since Katrina, or why there seems to be a difference now?
I really don't know. You know, I really don't know why it has been more of an influx of weapons. I have no theory on it. You know, I really don't know why all of a sudden people used to get mugged, but they got mugged without weapons. Now they get mugged with, you know, it's armed robbery, where, you know, your life can really change drastically in a matter of seconds. As opposed to just losing your money, you can lose your wife, your life and stuff. You know, so.
My name is Katie Mingle. I live in the Bywater. I've lived in New Orleans for a year. I wish I could say that I had some specific demands to make or any brilliant ideas about solving the problem of violence here, but mostly I'm just here because I feel kind of helpless and I don't know what else to do, and this seems like one thing to do, you know, and I think when things happen, like what's been happening in New Orleans, people just feel the sense that they need to rally together and come together. And so I don't know if it's like a false sense of actually changing anything, but I think the problems here are so complex and so deep-rooted that it's hard to imagine any, like, you know, like, I definitely think they start, like, in the communities with education, with better funding for public housing and public programs, social programs.
And do you feel like, you said that the march was sort of something people felt like they could do. Do you feel like it spawned other conversations, or that it will have an impact beyond just today in terms of people taking action?
It's hard to say. Like, I haven't lived in the city long enough to see what the patterns are of, like, I've heard, you know, like, this happens from time to time where there's these huge upsurges in violence, and then people march, and then there's publicity for a little while, and then it kind of just goes back to the way it is. And maybe that's true, but I still think it's worth being out here. And yeah, I mean, the march will get publicity, possibly put some pressure on the government to put more energy than they're currently putting into solving these problems. But then again, like, I'm also kind of a cynic, and sometimes I think these things are more symbolic than anything else, that they don't, you know, like, in terms of, like, any long-lasting change that's going to come out off of today, I don't know.
What do you think about the theme, this silence is violence?
I don't actually know if I get it. I mean, I guess it means that we should be out here, you know, raising our voices against this, and if not, then I don't know. It's a slogan, you know, like, it's hard to know what to put on these signs. I don't really like bumper stickers. I don't really like little slogans on signs that are supposed to sum up, like, all your ideas and feelings about something. But that's why, like, on my sign, I just kind of have a broken heart, because it's, like, I don't know, just shows some sort of, like, desperation and sadness.
My name is Yolanda Johnson. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm presently residing in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I'm here not just on behalf of Dr. Paul, who works for my company, Excelth Incorporated, but just for the city of New Orleans. I think it's time that we really unite and truly and honestly look at the issue of crime in this city. Since Helen was killed, I know that there are a lot of people who have made their final determination that they're not coming back. I think this is a city that could be viable if our politicians and elected officials take charge and take trustworthy leadership.
And are you coming to City Hall today with any specific recommendations for the mayor or the police superintendent or anyone else?
Well, I think there are a lot of New Orleans residents who are residing in Baton Rouge, and I think we do want some direction. If there is a plan that's clear and mandated for the citizens of New Orleans, I think that the community would be more than happy and willing to band together to help do that, whether it be, you know, crime watchers or what have you, I don't know. But I think that people now do want a plan. They do want to take an active part and be a part of the solution and not just point fingers.
Do you think that the city is prepared to support inter-neighborhood conversations about these issues?
I think the city has always been prepared to support conversations between neighborhoods about the issues. And pre-Katrina, those things did take place. But I think now, with citizens and neighbors being so scattered and neighborhoods being half full and half empty, maybe it has not always been on the forefront. But I think now that this has happened, we're more willing to kind of get back on the bandwagon of doing those things. And not just get back on the bandwagon, but really take a serious approach to what needs to be done to curb the crime in this area.
Do you feel like the continued displacement of people, especially in cities like Houston, is having an effect on the crime here in New Orleans?
Yes, I think that some of the crime that we're seeing, and I don't know for sure because I am not familiar with all of the statistics, but I do think that some of the crime that's being committed, it's not being committed by residents of New Orleans. I think that some people have taken an opportunity to come here that are criminal-minded to actually do these types of activities, which has given our city a bad reputation. And then on the other hand, we have a lot of residents who are in Houston and other cities who are not coming back because of the crime.
I'm not a politician, and I am just fed up. Thank you, the residents of New Orleans, for being here today to deliver our message of desperation and exasperation. For the last year, our neighborhoods have been the model of civic participation. We have made every effort to communicate with our city officials and work closely with the police. In spite of this, Steve Riley was shot in the head Monday night while squatting in a vacant house. Today, the trail of blood and open door remain. Chief Warren Riley and Mayor Nagin's call for residents to galvanize is an insult. Yeah. We have been galvanized for 16 months. We have been galvanized. We live in a city where the inaction of our federal, state, and local governments force us to step over the bodies of the dead. Diminishes us. Each day that we continue to be ignored by the city, by the state, and federally elected officials who are duty-bound to represent us diminishes the United States of America. We are doing our community policing. We need backup. We photographed, we followed, and we reported. We emailed, we called, we met in person with the District 2 police. What more? What more?
No more Nagin!
To quote our mayor, I am pissed. Let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of America.
Bart Everson. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization. And also, I'm here because I'm a personal friend of Helen Hills. And her murder affected me very deeply. Helen's funeral took place yesterday in South Carolina. And there were seven cities across North America. There have been gatherings to commemorate her memory, which is a testimony to what an extraordinary woman she was. But make no mistake, we are not marching just for Helen Hill. We're marching for Dick Shavers. We're marching for Jelena Brown. We're marching for Steve Blair and Corey Hayes and Eddie St. Fleur and Manya Gindy. We're marching for Don Morgan and Larry Glover and Mike Sprague. We're marching for Preston Turner. And I mention Preston because he was a 15-year-old child who was gunned down in broad daylight on the street corner near my house in Mid-City back in 2004. And does anybody remember that day in 2004 when 9 people were killed by guns in just over 24 hours? This is not a new problem. It is not a Katrina problem. Katrina just provided a momentary interruption. This wave of violent crime has been on the rise for years, and it has left us feeling sad and scared and very, very angry. And I'm still sad They tell me that in time you learn to cope with that. I'm still scared. But anyone who's lived in New Orleans for a while knows you learn to cope with that too. But the anger sticks around for a while. And that's why we're here. Fear keeps you in your house, but anger drives you into the streets. But there's another feeling. It's not just anger. There's another feeling that doesn't get talked about as much. And that's shame. I think we all feel a deep sense of shame. Or we should. Because this murderous, violent society is our society. How can we be proud of the good things in our society if we do not take responsibility for the bad? Fueling our anger is the perception that our leaders do not share our fear and our sense of shame. And so today I want to say, shame on you, Mayor Nagin, Superintendent Riley, District Attorney Jordan. You have really let us down. You have failed us. The criminal justice system and the government is broken. And I want to communicate to you the level of outrage that my friends and neighbors are feeling because we don't think you get it. Families that have lived in New Orleans for over 300 years are talking about leaving. People displaced by the flood are saying they're afraid to come back. That is the level of hopelessness and despair. They'd like you to step up and just do your jobs, but they don't think you can. They'd like you to step. They'd like you to step down. Just be replaced by more incompetent people. Many of my neighbors believe that we need to see the federal government step in and take over New Orleans or the criminal justice system. Which the feeling seems to be that even FEMA couldn't screw up any worse than we have. At first I thought that was a joke, but it seems more possible every day, and there's nothing funny about it. I'm almost done. Leaders, you need to do something that many of us think you cannot do. You need to be honest. You need to admit that what you're doing isn't working and plan a return to true community policing. I've got an article in my pocket from 6 years ago that praises New Orleans as a model of how to reduce violent crime. It's hard to believe, isn't it? Between 1994 and 1999, the murder rate went down 65%. The credit goes to something called community policing, decentralizing their personnel into the neighborhoods with increased responsibility, more accountability for district commanders. Of course, to do that, we will need more police, and that means better pay for police so that a cop can get assigned. So that a cop can get assigned to just one or two zones and really get to know the neighborhood and neighbors can know them. Let's get back to that. It was working. But we also need to think of creative solutions outside traditional law enforcement strategies. We desperately need to experiment with some kind of decriminalization to eliminate the black market for drugs. Some will say, that's too radical. But we say there's nothing too radical when the stakes are this high. Of course,
We want action, not rhetoric. Above all, we want results. We must have a higher felony conviction rate. The national average is 57%. Our rate is 7%. We must see a reduction in crime, and above all, a reduction in violent crime, and that is the bottom line. But how will we know whether or not this is being achieved? That is why we must have full, independently audited disclosure of crime statistics. And I know I've only touched the surface. We know that law enforcement can't solve these problems. I've only talked about short-term stuff. We need long-term solutions, too. We must have better schools. We must have an economy beyond tourism. We must pay workers a living wage. We must fight racism and classism wherever it exists. It will take all of us. It will take community involvement. Well, look around. The community is involved, and we will stay involved. To our political class, I say you're on notice. We will be watching.
And I want all y'all to look at this. All y'all come in second line, y'all support us. But I'm gonna make this statement, and I mean this. You see all the young black people right here? We preserve New Orleans history and music all over the world.
Not all of us is murderers. I don't have no ambition on going to Angola for the rodeo, for a video, or nothing else. I don't go around talking about people. You see all these people right here? Ain't none of us over 30, and we all making a statement for young black people. Walking the steps of Tuba Fat, Harold Desjardins, because they made the way for me to continue this music. This year, I went to Switzerland and England, and you know what the people told me? Earl Spencer, Diana's brother, they said they're not coming to New Orleans, but Glenn, I'll bring you to England. I'll buy you a house over here. I won't live in the Sixth Ward, man. I don't want to live in no England. I want to live where I can walk and go to the second line. We tired of y'all coming to the second line with them guns. If you're not coming to dance, stay the hell away from there. Stay up. If you're not coming to the second line, don't come. And if you don't like what I say, I'm in the 1500 block of Dumaine and Robson and everything. I want to see you run me out of the wall. My cousin Jay Mandrews that took me all over the world with Trombone Shorty. And everywhere we go, we hear the same thing. You people. People. Musicians? But then I forgot. They don't have no music in school. And I'm going to make this statement, and I'm very serious. I'm scared to death of the police. I'm going to tell you that straight up. Just the other day, I'm coming from Preservation Hall, and the first thing, hey, you come here. Can't you see I got on a black suit with a horn? Do it look like I'm selling rocks? I look like I'm trying to rob somebody. I'm going to sit down and sing traditional jail. Y'all got to encourage the young people. And young people, shame on you. Because you know better. We don't have no business standing up here like this with the Nero family. The Nero's my friend. I knew him since a child. We traveled all over together, and I hated to see him lose his life. If we don't get music in schools, and first of all, people, stop having this mentality where nobody can't tell your child nothing. Yeah. Nobody can tell your child nothing and go back to Houston. I don't like Houston anyway. I love New Orleans. I don't like Atlanta. I love New Orleans. I don't like Tennessee. I love New Orleans. We're going to stay united. This is a shame for this woman to have to be up here. Shame. My children don't know nothing but nigga this and nigga that. I ain't no nigga and I don't know no niggas. I don't know no crackers or no hookers. All I know is citizens of New Orleans. And if you ain't gonna be a citizen of New Orleans, get the hell away from us. I live in a trailer. And the only thing that keeps my neighborhood going is John Blanchard from the Rockin' Bowl. Helping provide extra security up there. It's too damn dark, man. Get on your job. We need light. The bus don't run at night. Well, how the hell I'm gonna get home? You talk about starting the curfew. My kids don't get over the 2:30. You gonna cut my money? Then I'm gonna have to sell rocks.
Harlem had the second line jumping. And we're going to continue to jump. You know why?
Because
God is on our side.
Shavers, and I'm the baby sister of Denaro Shavers. Yeah! On December 28, 2006, a permanent citizen was unnecessarily wiped off the face of this earth. My big brother, Denaro Shavers, was violently shot down. At this time, I would like to offer my deepest prayers to the Bynes family. 17-year-old David Bynes is accused of killing my brother. I just pray at this time that the Lord have mercy on his soul. My message today is for the young people. We have to stop the violence. I'm attending college right now, and my intention is to come back and become a prominent politician for this city. The way that it is, I won't have a city to return to. If the crime rate continues to go up the way that it is, no one will ever want to come back here. They will continue to stereotype us, and we will continue to get little or no help from the government. But I'm here to tell you today that we are taking a stand. We taking our city back. We refuse to let our city go down to violence. What hurts me the most is the fact that all the positive roles that my brother played in this city, in the recovery after Katrina, and the musical culture that he loved so much, he still wasn't exempt to the foolishness and the violence that's going on today. My fellow citizens, I'm taking a stand right now. I ask that you stand with me. Me and my family, we are taking a stand right now. I ask that you not let the death of my brother, Mrs. Helen Hill, and all the rest of my New Orleans citizens go in vain. Thank you.
Thank you.
the Dirty Dozen Brass Band performing the New Orleans Jazz Funeral Standard, A Closer Walk with Thee. Before that, an excerpt of the song Fly Away by the Hot 8 Brass Band, and the Troublemakers theme song from Dr. Paul's band, The Troublemakers. Speakers from the Citizens March Against Crime included neighborhood activist Karen Gadbois, Bart Everson, a friend of Helen Hill, trombone player Glenn David Andrews, and Daniel Shavers' sister, Nikita Shavers. Additional speeches can be heard at neworleans.indymedia.org. The Tipitinas Foundation has a website for the Hot 8 Brass Band at tipitinas.com/foundation. And the New Orleans Musicians Hurricane Relief Fund is accepting donations dedicated to helping Daniel Shavers' family and for funeral expenses. That's at nomhrf.org. Donations in Helen Hill's memory may be sent to the Columbia College Helen Addison Wingard Scholarship Fund, to Doctors Without Borders, or to her son's scholarship fund. Friends of Helen Hill set up a memorial website with links to these causes at helenhill.org. The website for the March Against Crime is silenceisviolence.org. Thanks to Cassandra Burroughs for contributing to the production of this segment of Community Gumbo, and thanks to Jeffrey Hennies for supplying audio of the rally speeches. For Community Gumbo in New Orleans, this is Brian Denzer.